A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. Italy just let its defense cooperation agreement with Israel expire. No renewal. No replacement. What was actually in that deal? What specific military capabilities and intelligence channels are now on ice? And why does this matter beyond the headlines? Because this isn't just one contract running out. It's about how European nations are recalibrating their defense relationships in real time. And the choices they're making reveal more than any white paper ever could.
It's the most significant structural break we've seen so far. Not a single arms shipment suspended, not a rhetorical condemnation, an entire multi-year framework walked away from. The agreement was called the Accordo di Cooperazione nel Settore della Difesa, signed in 2017, renewed in 2021 for a 5-year term, expired April 2026. Italian Defense Minister Guido Crosetto announced the non-renewal in a parliamentary hearing on April 12th, citing what he called evolved strategic priorities and alignment with European defense frameworks.
Evolved strategic priorities? That's the diplomatic equivalent of, it's not you, it's me, except the me in this case is 21 EU nations who've decided they'd rather build their own air defense club. And I have to say, when I first read that phrase, I thought, is this actually a strategic evolution, or is it just the path of least political resistance, dressed up in bureaucratic language?
That's exactly where this connects. But before we get to the geopolitics, let's establish what this agreement actually enabled on a technical level, because the coverage has been frustratingly vague about that. Most outlets ran with the political angle and never bothered to explain what was inside the framework.
That's the part I want to understand. What was happening under this agreement that wouldn't have happened otherwise? If I'm a defense planner in Rome, what did I have on Monday that I don't have on Tuesday?
3 major pillars. First, joint military research and development. Most significantly, Italy's role as a co-developer in the David Sling missile defense system alongside Israel and the United States. Second, a classified intelligence sharing annex focused on Mediterranean maritime surveillance and North African militant groups. Third, industrial offsets. Israel committed to purchasing 1.2 billion euros in Italian defense equipment over 10 years, avionics, naval components, small arms.
Italy wasn't just a customer buying Israeli tech off the shelf. They were embedded in the development pipeline. They had engineers in the room, they had source code access, they had a say in the requirements.
Let me walk through David Sling, because it's the crown jewel of this partnership, and it illustrates exactly what's being lost. It's a 2-stage interceptor designed to hit medium to long-range rockets and cruise missiles, range of about 300 kilometers. Think of it as the middle layer in Israel's multi-tier air defense, sitting between Iron Dome for short-range threats and Arrow for ballistic missiles. Uses a dual-band seeker, one electro-optical, one radar, which makes it extremely hard to spoof. An incoming missile can try to jam one band, but it's nearly impossible to jam both simultaneously. Italy, through Leonardo, supplied the command and control software. That's not a bolt-on component, that's the brain of the system, the thing that decides which interceptor goes where and when. Italy also contributed roughly 200 million euros in research and development funding between 2017 and 2025.
When the non-renewal was announced, what actually stops? The missiles already in the field don't suddenly forget how to intercept. The software doesn't uninstall itself.
Right, and this is the first misconception worth addressing. Existing contracts remain in force. Italy's David Sling batteries stay operational, maintenance continues, spare parts keep flowing. What stops is future joint development. If Israel and the U.S. develop a next-generation seeker or an extended-range variant, and there are active programs looking at exactly that, Italy is no longer in the room. They're a customer now, not a partner. They get the product brochure, not the engineering specs.
Which means they lose influence over the roadmap. They can't shape requirements to fit Italian operational needs.
They lose the industrial IP transfer that comes with co-development. That's the part that matters to Leonardo and the Italian Defense Industrial Base. When you co-develop, your engineers learn how the system works at a fundamental level. That knowledge transfers to other programs. When you buy off the shelf, you get a sealed box and a maintenance manual. The second pillar is the Barak 8 Naval Air Defense System, joint venture between Israel Aerospace Industries and Italy's MBDA Italia. Range of 70 to 100 kilometers, deployed on 10 Italian Navy vessels, their Fremm frigates and Horizon-class destroyers. The non-renewal doesn't cancel those deployments, but it blocks Italy from participating in the planned Barak ER, the extended range variant that was supposed to push range out past 150 kilometers.
They're locked into the current capability ceiling, no upgrade path, and naval threats don't stand still.
And naval air defense is one of those domains where capability gaps compound over time. A system that was state-of-the-art in 2021 starts looking very different against hypersonic anti-ship missiles in 2030. To put that in concrete terms, the Russian Zircon hypersonic missile reportedly travels at Mach 8 to 9 and can maneuver in flight. A Barak 8 interceptor, designed primarily for sub-hypersonic threats, faces real kinematic limitations against that kind of target. The Barak ER variant was supposed to address some of those limitations with a larger booster and an upgraded seeker. Without a seat at the development table, Italy has to either buy whatever Israel produces on commercial terms and pay whatever price Israel sets, or find an alternative system, which means ripping out existing launchers and combat management systems from 10 warships. Neither option is cheap.
Which brings us to the third pillar, the intelligence sharing. And this is the one I suspect keeps Italian defense officials up at night.
This is the part that's hardest to quantify, but arguably the most operationally significant. The agreement included a classified annex, never published, but enough has been reported to understand the broad contours on signals intelligence cooperation, specifically Israeli SIGINT feeds covering the Eastern Mediterranean, Libyan coast, and North African militant networks. Israel operates some of the most sophisticated SIGINT platforms in the region, including the OFEC satellite constellation and airborne collection systems that fly patterns over the Eastern Med. Italy used these feeds for two main purposes. 1. Tracking arms smuggling to Hezbollah via Syria and maritime routes. 2. Monitoring migrant smuggling networks operating out of Libya and Tunisia.
There was an ANS report on this, wasn't there?
Yes, ANSA had a detailed breakdown on April 14th. And there's a concrete case that illustrates what's being lost. In 2023, Italian SIGINT derived from this agreement helped intercept a shipment of Iranian-made drones destined for Hezbollah via Syria. The drones were concealed in a commercial container vessel that transited the Suez Canal and was tracked through Israeli satellite and signals coverage. Italian naval forces interdicted the vessel in the central Mediterranean based on that intelligence. That intelligence channel is now closed. Italy still has its own SIGINT capabilities. They operate signals intelligence vessels like the Elettra and have a capable agency in AISED. But they've lost access to Israeli feeds that provided coverage in areas where Italy doesn't have the same asset density.
It's a coverage gap, not a capability gap. They can still do the mission, just with less granularity in certain theaters. But how much less granularity are we talking about? Is this like losing one camera in a network of 50? Or losing the only camera pointing at a specific hallway?
It's closer to the latter for specific threat streams. The Eastern Mediterranean and the Syria-Lebanon corridor are areas where Israeli SIGINT coverage is uniquely dense because those threats are existential for Israel in a way they aren't for Italy. Israel has dedicated collection assets focused on Hezbollah weapons, flows 24/7, 365 days a year. Italy doesn't have that level of persistent coverage in those areas because its intelligence priorities are spread across North Africa, the Sahel, and the Balkans. So for the specific mission of tracking Iranian weapon shipments to Hezbollah, the Israeli feed was probably the single most valuable source Italy had. They can supplement with other sources, NATO maritime patrols, U.S. intelligence sharing, their own limited collection, but the picture is now less complete.
The fourth piece, which we shouldn't gloss over, is the industrial offset collapse.
Israel had committed to 1.2 billion euros in procurement from Italian defense contractors. Leonardo, Fincantieri, Beretta, these companies had those orders baked into their medium-term revenue forecasts. Those commitments are now void.
$1.2 billion is real money. Even for companies of that size, that's not a rounding error.
It's not existential for Leonardo. They did about $15 billion in revenue last year, but it's not trivial either. To put it in perspective, $1.2 billion over 10 years is about $120 million per year. Leonardo's annual research and development budget is roughly 2 billion euros, so we're talking about 6% of their annual R&D spend. Not a company killer, but enough to affect hiring plans, enough to affect which projects get prioritized. And the timing is rough, because Italy is simultaneously trying to ramp up participation in European defense projects, which require their own industrial investment. The free capacity might get absorbed by new European contracts, but there's a transition gap. Engineers who were working on Israeli co-development projects don't magically pivot to GCAP overnight. There's a lag, and during that lag, you're paying people to retool rather than deliver.
Let's zoom out, because the technical dependencies don't exist in a vacuum. What changed between 2021 and now that made Italy walk away from a framework that was delivering real operational value? Because in 2021, when they renewed this, everyone in Rome presumably knew what they were getting and decided it was worth it.
Three forces converging. The Gaza War and its political fallout in Europe, Italy's strategic pivot toward European defense frameworks, and domestic coalition politics under Meloni. Let me take them in order. The war in Gaza, which began with the October 7th attacks and has continued through multiple phases into 2026, fundamentally shifted the political calculus for any European government maintaining close defense ties with Israel. We're not talking about a two-month conflict that faded from headlines. This has been a sustained, multi-year war with enormous civilian casualties, and it's reshaped public opinion across Europe. The EU imposed sanctions on 12 Israeli settlers and three organizations in April 2025 for human rights abuses in the West Bank. Spain, Ireland, and Belgium suspended arms exports. Italy's non-renewal is part of that broader trend, but it's more significant because it terminates a framework rather than freezing a transaction. Suspending an arms shipment is a one-time decision that can be reversed. Letting a multi-year agreement expire without renewal is a structural shift.
You said this isn't solely about Gaza. If the war ended tomorrow, would Italy rush to sign a new agreement?
Probably not, and that brings us to the second force. The European Defense Integration Agenda. Italy joined the European Sky Shield Initiative, ESSI, in November 2025. That's 21 European nations building a common air defense architecture, and it competes directly with Israeli systems like David's Sling and Iron Dome. If you're committing to ESSI, maintaining a parallel co-development partnership with Israel's missile defense industry starts to look strategically incoherent. You're essentially funding two competing air defense architectures, and at some point the requirements start to conflict.
Pick a team.
And Italy picked. The third force is Meloni's domestic position. She leads a right-wing coalition that includes both pro-Israel elements. Her party has historically been supportive of Israel and sovereignty. Focused factions that want European defense autonomy. The non-renewal is a compromise. It doesn't cancel existing contracts, so it avoids a full rupture with Israel and keeps the pro-Israel wing of her coalition from revolting. But it signals a shift that appeases both the left, which is angry about Gaza, and the Europeanist right, which wants Italian industry focused on EU projects. It's a classic Meloni move, triangulate between factions and find a position that everyone can live with even if no one loves it.
It's the political equivalent of soft decoupling. Maintain the operational relationship, but stop deepening it. Keep the furniture, don't renew the lease.
That's exactly the phrase defense analysts are using, and it's a template other European nations are watching closely. France has a similar defense agreement with Israel signed in 2019, renewed in 2024, that one's up for renewal in 2028. Germany maintains its agreement, including joint development of the Arrow 4 system, while also participating in ESSI. Germany is trying to have it both ways. They want to be a founding member of European Air Defense Integration and simultaneously co-develop an exo-atmospheric interceptor with Israel.
Italy's decision suggests that having it both ways may not be sustainable long-term. At some point, the framework's conflict, you can't serve two masters indefinitely.
The German case is instructive because it shows the tension in high relief. Germany is co-developing Arrow 4 with Israel. That's an exo-atmospheric interceptor designed to stop long-range ballistic missiles outside the atmosphere. A completely different class of threat from what David Sling handles, while simultaneously being a founding member of ESSI. The difference is Germany hasn't yet faced the renewal moment. Their agreement runs through 2030. When that date approaches, they'll have to make the same calculation Italy just made. And the pressure will be even greater because Arrow 4 is a much bigger program than anything Italy was involved in. We're talking about a system designed to counter Iranian ballistic missiles, with development costs in the billions. Walking away from that is a much heavier lift politically and industrially.
What's Israel's response been to all this? I imagine there were some tense phone calls between Jerusalem and Rome.
Israeli Defense Minister Yoav Gallant called the decision disappointing but not catastrophic in a May 2026 interview, which is about right. Israel's defense export strategy has been diversifying away from Europe for several years. They saw the political winds shifting and started adjusting. They're courting Greece and Cyprus as alternative Mediterranean partners, and they've accelerated talks with India for joint missile defense development. The India piece is particularly interesting because it's a much larger market than Italy and doesn't come with the same political baggage. India has its own strategic competition with China and Pakistan, and it's not particularly concerned about European public opinion on Gaza.
India's been buying Israeli defense tech for decades, drones, radars, missiles. But this would be a step up to co-development. That's a different relationship.
That's the strategic shift worth watching. If Europe becomes an unreliable partner for Israeli defense co-development, Israel will find other partners. India, the Gulf states through the Abraham Accords framework, possibly South Korea. The technology doesn't sit still waiting for politics to resolve. The engineers who were working on the next generation David Sling Seeker with Leonardo will find other partners. The question is whether those new partnerships produce systems that are as capable as what the Italy-Israel-US triangle was producing. The triangle had complementary strengths: U.S. funding and testing infrastructure, Israeli innovation and operational experience, Italian software, and naval integration expertise. Replicating that with a different set of partners is possible, but not straightforward.
Let me ask about the European defense dimension specifically. You mentioned ESSI and PESCO. For someone who follows this space but doesn't have the acronyms memorized, what's the actual architecture Italy is pivoting toward? What does the alternative look like?
ESSI is the European Sky Shield Initiative, a German-led project to create a common air defense procurement and interoperability framework. 21 countries, including the UK, the Nordics, the Baltics, and most of Central Europe. It's not an EU institution, which is why the UK could join post-Brexit. The idea is pooled procurement of off-the-shelf systems, primarily the U.S. Patriot system, the German IRIS-T, and eventually the Israeli Arrow 3, interestingly, to create a layered defense that's cheaper and more integrated than every country buying its own mix. Instead of 21 separate procurement processes, with 21 separate maintenance contracts and 21 separate training pipelines, you have a single framework that buys in bulk and standardizes across the coalition.
Wait, Arrow 3 is Israeli. So ESSI isn't excluding Israeli tech entirely? That complicates the narrative.
It's not a boycott. Germany already bought Arrow 3 for its own defense, and ESSI members can procure it if they want. The difference is the institutional relationship. Under ESSI, you're buying a product. Under the Italy-Israel agreement, you're co-developing the next generation and sharing the IP. ESSI turns Israel from a partner into a vendor. And vendors don't get a seat at the requirements table. They get a purchase order.
Which changes the long-term trajectory of Italian defense industry. If you're just buying off the shelf, you're not building domestic design capability. You're not training the next generation of Italian missile engineers on cutting-edge seeker technology.
That's the tension within Italy's decision. The pivot to ESSI and PESCO, the EU's Permanent Structured Cooperation on Defense, frees up budget and industrial capacity for joint European projects. The Eurodrone, the next-generation fighter through GCAP with the UK and Japan, the European Long-Range Strike Approach program that's being debated for 2027. These are ambitious projects that could genuinely advance European defense autonomy. GCAP alone is a sixth-generation fighter program that aims to field a manned, unmanned teaming capability by 2035. That's the kind of program that defines an industrial base for a generation. But these projects are also years away from delivering operational capability. In the meantime, Italy has downgraded an active partnership that was delivering real intelligence and real technology today. The Eurodrone has been in development since 2015 and still hasn't entered service. GCAP is targeting 2035, and I'd bet good money that slips to 2040, so you're trading a functioning partnership now for a promised capability later.
There's a capability trough, a gap between what they're losing and what they hope to gain. And the trough might be deeper and longer than the optimistic projections suggest.
Managing that gap is the operational challenge for the Italian defense establishment over the next 5 to 7 years. They have to keep their existing Israeli systems operational, maintain readiness, and simultaneously invest in European projects that won't bear fruit until the early 2030s. That's a difficult budgeting exercise, even in good times, and European defense budgets are stretched by the war in Ukraine and the broader rearmament push. Italy's defense budget is about 1.5% of GDP, and there's constant pressure to increase it toward the NATO target of 2% while also funding these new European initiatives. Something has to give, and the worry is that readiness suffers during the transition.
Let's talk about the French divergence, because that's the comparison that makes Italy's decision look less inevitable. France has a similar defense agreement with Israel, signed 2019, renewed 2024. Still in force. Why is France on a different path?
French defense policy operates on a different axis. France has always prioritized strategic autonomy. That's a Gaullist principle that transcends left and right, and they view Israel as a useful partner in that project, not a competitor. For France, strategic autonomy means having independent options across the full spectrum of military capability. Israel provides options in missile defense, drones, and intelligence that complement French indigenous capabilities without creating dependency. French defense industry is also larger and more self-sufficient than Italy's. Dassault, Thales, Naval Group. These companies don't need European frameworks to the same degree because they already have independent export markets and domestic programs. Dassault sold 80 Rafales to the UAE. Thales has radar contracts all over the world. Naval Group is building submarines for Australia. They're not desperate for European collaboration in the way that Italian industry sometimes is.
France can afford to keep both relationships running without the strategic incoherence problem. They're big enough to have it both ways.
The test comes in 2028 when the French agreement is up for renewal. By then, we'll know whether Italy's decision was a one-off driven by Meloni's specific political calculus or the start of a broader European trend. My instinct is, it's the latter. The political pressure around Gaza isn't going away, and the institutional pull of European defense frameworks is only getting stronger. The European Defense Fund is disbursing real money. PESCO projects are moving from paper to prototype. The gravity of European defense integration is increasing, and at some point, even France will feel the pull.
There's also the domestic Italian industrial angle we haven't fully explored. You mentioned Leonardo and Fincantieri losing those offset contracts. What's the net effect for them? Is this actually bad for Italian industry? Or does the pivot to European projects more than compensate?
The honest answer is, it depends on execution. And execution in European defense procurement is not exactly a confidence-inspiring track record. The lost Israeli offsets are 1.2 billion euros over what would have been the remaining 5 years of the agreement. That's about 240 million per year. Not nothing, but not transformative for companies of Leonardo's scale. The European Defense Fund has a budget of about 8 billion euros for the 2021 to 2027 period, and Italy is positioned to capture a meaningful share of that. GCAP, the Global Combat Air Program with the UK and Japan, is a multi-decade, multi-billion euro program. If Leonardo secures significant work packages on GCAP that dwarfs the Israeli offsets, we're talking about a program that could be worth 50 to 100 billion euros over its lifetime. Even a 10% work share is 5 to 10 billion.
The industrial case for the pivot is plausible. It's not obviously self-harming. If the European projects deliver, Italian industry comes out ahead.
It's a calculated bet. The risk is that European defense projects are notorious for delays and cost overruns. The Eurodrone has been in development for over a decade and still isn't operational. The A400M transport aircraft was years late and billions over budget. GCAP is targeting a 2035 service entry, and those timelines almost always slip. The F-35 was supposed to enter service in 2012 and didn't reach initial operating capability until 2015, and that was a U.S.-led program with vastly more resources. If the European project stall, Italy has given up a functioning partnership for a promise, and promises don't defend airspace.
Which is the defense procurement story in every country since the invention of defense procurement. The future system is always going to be better and cheaper and arrive on schedule, and the current system is always a maintenance nightmare, until the future system becomes the current system and the cycle repeats.
The glockenspiel of military-industrial inefficiency, playing the same tune for centuries. Every procurement official thinks their program will be the one that breaks the cycle. Almost none of them are right.
Let's turn to what this means for Israel's position in the Mediterranean more broadly. You mentioned Greece and Cyprus as alternative partners. What does that triangle look like in practice?
Israel has been building a strategic triangle with Greece and Cyprus for over a decade. Energy cooperation around natural gas fields in the eastern Mediterranean, joint military exercises, and increasingly defense-industrial cooperation. The energy dimension is actually the foundation. The Leviathan and Tamar gas fields off Israel's coast, combined with the Aphrodite field off Cyprus, have created a set of shared economic interests that naturally pulled the three countries together. You have Israeli gas flowing to Egyptian liquefaction plants, Greek companies involved in pipeline feasibility studies, Cypriot waters hosting Israeli naval exercises. Defense cooperation grows out of that economic interdependence. Greece operates Israeli drones, the Heron and Hermes systems, and is interested in Iron Dome technology for protecting its islands. Cyprus hosts Israeli training exercises, including Air Force drills that simulate long-range strike missions. The Italy non-renewal accelerates the importance of those relationships. Israel is now more dependent on the Greece-Cyprus corridor for Mediterranean access and intelligence coverage.
Greece and Cyprus don't have Italy's defense industrial base. They can't co-develop systems at the same level. Greece has some shipbuilding capacity and Hellenic aerospace industry, but it's not Leonardo.
They can't. And that's the structural limitation Israel faces, the pool of countries capable of meaningful defense co-development, as opposed to just procurement, is small. The US, the UK, France, Germany, Italy, India, South Korea, Japan. That's basically the list. Losing one of those partners shrinks the pool by more than just 1/8, because each partnership has unique industrial specializations. Italy's strength was naval systems and command and control software. India's strength is different, manufacturing scale and lower cost production, plus a massive domestic market that can sustain production lines. South Korea's strength is rapid prototyping and electronics miniaturization. The partnerships aren't interchangeable. You can't just plug India into the role Italy was playing and expect the same output.
Israel's defense industrial strategy has to adapt to a smaller set of deep partners and a larger set of commercial customers. Fewer co-development relationships, more off-the-shelf sales.
That adaptation is already underway. IAI and Rafael have been shifting their export models toward more off-the-shelf sales and away from co-development with European partners, partly because they saw this coming. The political risk of European defense partnerships has been rising since at least 2023. The Italy decision just makes it concrete. You can see it in the way Israeli defense companies are structuring their deals. Shorter terms, fewer IP sharing provisions, more emphasis on selling complete systems rather than components. It's a defensive strategy designed to minimize exposure to political disruption, but it also limits the upside. Co-development creates stickier relationships and longer revenue streams. Off-the-shelf sales are transactional. You sell the system, you provide maintenance for a few years, and then the customer either buys the next version or doesn't.
What about the intelligence sharing dimension specifically? You mentioned the 2023 Iranian drone interdiction case. Are there other documented examples of what this channel provided? I want to get a sense of the operational tempo here.
Most of the specifics are classified, but enough has emerged through parliamentary testimony and investigative reporting to piece together the scope. The Italian Parliament's Defense Committee received a closed-door briefing in April, where intelligence officials reportedly described the Israeli feeds as covering three main areas. First, signals intelligence on Hezbollah weapons shipments through Syria and maritime routes. That's the Iranian drone case and several others. Second, monitoring of militant groups in Libya and the Sahel that have connections to smuggling networks affecting Italy. Third, early warning on unconventional threats, drones, cruise missiles, cyber attacks, directed at Italian assets in the region.
All three of those are relevant to core Italian national security interests. These aren't nice to have intelligence products. They're directly tied to threats that affect Italian territory and Italian forces.
The Central Mediterranean is Italy's strategic backyard. Migration flows from North Africa are a first-order domestic political issue. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of arrivals in some years, and the smuggling networks that facilitate those flows are increasingly connected to militant groups that have access to weapons and explosives. Energy security. Italy imports significant natural gas from Algeria and Libya through the Trans-Mediterranean pipeline, and those infrastructure links are potential targets. In 2024, there was a credible threat against Algerian gas infrastructure that Italian intelligence assessed with input from Israeli sources. Losing the Israeli SIGINT feeds doesn't blind Italy, but it reduces the density of their coverage at a time when the threat environment is getting more complex, not less. You have Russian naval activity in the Mediterranean increasing. You have Chinese interest in port infrastructure in North Africa. You have instability in Libya creating ungoverned spaces where militant groups can operate. The intelligence requirements are expanding, and Italy just lost a source.
This is what I find most interesting about the decision. The technical and industrial arguments for the pivot are defensible. The political logic is clear. But the intelligence loss is real and immediate, and it can't be replaced by a European framework that doesn't yet exist. European intelligence sharing is still fragmented. There's no EU equivalent of Five Eyes. You can't just log into a portal and download the same feeds from a different provider.
There isn't, and creating one would require a level of trust and institutional integration that European nations haven't shown they're willing to accept. Intelligence sharing is the hardest form of defense cooperation because it requires trusting another country with your sources and methods. It means telling them how you know what you know, which exposes your collection capabilities to potential compromise. The Five Eyes Alliance, the US, UK, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, works because it's built on decades of trust, common language, shared legal frameworks, and a track record of not leaking each other's secrets. Europe doesn't have that. The Italy-Israel channel worked because it was bilateral, classified, and focused on specific operational requirements. Two countries with complementary capabilities and aligned interests in specific theaters. Replacing that with a multilateral European framework is a much heavier lift than joining ESSI for air defense procurement. ESSI is about buying hardware. Intelligence sharing is about trusting someone with your most sensitive secrets.
Italy has made a strategic bet that the long-term benefits of European defense integration outweigh the short to medium-term costs of losing Israeli intelligence and co-development access. And the bet might pay off, but it's not free. There's a bill coming due in the form of reduced intelligence coverage and lost industrial capability, and someone has to pay it.
That's the cleanest summary I can offer, and it's a bet that every European nation with significant Israeli defense ties is going to have to evaluate for itself. France in 2028, Germany in 2030, potentially the UK depending on how its post-Brexit defense relationships evolve. Italy just went first. And going first is always the hardest because you don't have the benefit of seeing how it works out for someone else.
Let's pull out some actionable implications from all this. For defense analysts, what's the leading indicator to watch? If I'm trying to figure out whether this is a one-off or the start of a trend, what am I tracking?
Italy's participation in PESCO projects over the next 18 months. The next major test is the 2027 decision on whether to join the European Long-Range Strike Approach Program, ELSA. If Italy signs on to ELSA, that confirms the pivot is structural, not tactical. ELSA is a deep strike capability program that would compete conceptually with some of the capabilities Israel offers. If they hesitate or seek a bilateral arrangement with Israel on a specific capability, that suggests the decoupling is more limited than it appears. Also watch French and German defense ministry statements in the run-up to their own renewal deadlines. If you start seeing language about evolving strategic frameworks and European defense integration in French and German official communications, that's a signal that Italy's decision is being used as a template. Leonardo and MBDA Italia shares may see near-term headwinds from the lost Israeli offset contracts, but the freed industrial capacity for GCAP and other European projects could be a net positive over a 3 to 5 year horizon. The key signal is new GCAP contract announcements. If Leonardo secures major work packages, that more than compensates. Watch for announcements in the second half of 2026 and early 2027. Also worth watching, Israeli defense companies, IAI, Rafael, Elbit, and whether they announce new co-development agreements with India or Gulf states. Those announcements would confirm that Israel is successfully diversifying away from European partners, which would mitigate the strategic impact of further European decoupling. The Italy-Israel case is a template for soft decoupling. You don't cancel existing contracts, you don't burn the relationship, but you stop deepening it and redirect new investment toward your preferred framework. That preserves operational capability during the transition and avoids the diplomatic blowback of a full rupture. Any European government considering a similar move will study how Italy managed the messaging and the transition timeline. The key lessons are, announce the decision as a strategic evolution, not a condemnation. Emphasize continuity of existing programs. Give industry time to adjust. And have a credible alternative framework in place before you walk away from the current one. Italy had ESSI and PESSI and PESCO to point to. A country that tries this without a clear alternative will have a much harder time.
It's the defense equivalent of not renewing the lease, but staying friends with the landlord. You don't slam the door, you don't leave a mess, you just quietly move your stuff out over a period of years.
Keeping the furniture you already bought. The Barak 8 missiles are still on the ships. The David Sling batteries are still operational. The relationship isn't dead. It's just no longer under a formal framework that commits both sides to future joint development. Ad hoc cooperation on specific projects will continue. Israeli and Italian intelligence officers will still talk at NATO meetings. Leonardo and IAI might still collaborate on specific subsystems where it makes commercial sense. The question is whether this becomes a permanent shift or a temporary recalibration. Are we looking at a 5-year pause or a permanent fork in the road?
What would trigger a recalibration back toward Israel? Under what circumstances does Rome pick up the phone and say, let's talk about a new agreement?
A few scenarios. If European defense projects stall badly, GCAP gets delayed by 5 years, ESSI procurement bogs down in national disputes about workshare allocation, the Eurodrone never quite reaches operational capability. The opportunity cost of the pivot starts to look worse. If the threat environment in the Mediterranean deteriorates and Italy finds its intelligence coverage insufficient, say there's a major terrorist attack in North Africa with connections to Europe that Italian intelligence missed, they might seek a new bilateral arrangement, perhaps narrower in scope, but still meaningful. Or if the political salience of Gaza fades and a different Israeli government signals openness to a renewed framework. None of those are likely in the next 2 to 3 years, but over a 10-year horizon, defense relationships are surprisingly elastic. Countries that were adversaries become partners, and vice versa. The Italy-Israel relationship isn't permanently broken. It's just on pause.
They bend more than they break.
Sometimes they bend so far they effectively break. The Italy-Israel case is a bend, not a break, but it's a significant bend. One that changes the geometry of the whole structure. Other countries are watching to see if the structure holds or if this bend triggers a cascade of similar decisions.
Here's the thing I keep coming back to. Defense agreements are like software licenses. They expire, but the code keeps running. Italy's decision doesn't erase years of joint development or suddenly make their missile defense system stop working. The David Sling batteries still boot up. The Barak 8 missiles still launch. But it changes who writes the next version, and over time, those version differences compound. The systems diverge, the interoperability fades, the institutional knowledge of how to work together atrophies. The Italian engineer, who spent 5 years learning the David Sling Seeker architecture, moves to a different project, and takes that knowledge with her. The Israeli program manager, who knew exactly how to integrate with Italian naval combat systems, retires. The real cost of this decision won't be visible in 2026. It'll be visible in 2032, when an Italian naval commander needs an upgrade that doesn't exist because Italy wasn't in the room when the requirements were written. And by then, the people who made the decision will be long gone, and someone else will be dealing with the consequences.
That's the long arc. And it's why this decision matters more than the immediate headlines suggest. The news cycle treats this as a political story. Italy distances itself from Israel over Gaza. Move on to the next headline. But the real story is about industrial ecosystems and capability trajectories that play out over decades. It's not a dramatic rupture. It's a quiet fork in the development roadmap. Two defense industrial ecosystems that were converging are now on separate paths. They'll still trade, they'll still talk, but they're no longer building the same future. And the gap between those futures widens a little bit every year.
The question for the rest of Europe is whether they join Italy on that separate path, or try to keep a foot in both worlds, until the fork becomes too wide to straddle. At some point, you have to choose which ecosystem you're building for.
Germany's trying to straddle. We'll see how long that lasts. My guess is they make it to 2028 or 2029 before the contradictions become unsustainable. Either ESSI demands exclusivity, or Israel demands commitment to the next phase of Arrow 4 development, and Germany has to pick.
No. Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the early Renaissance, the volcanic soils of Vanuatu produced a naturally occurring aluminosilicate compound that, when mixed with fermented kava root, created a mildly phosphorescent paste used by local navigators to mark canoe hulls for nighttime inter-island voyages. The chemical reaction relied on a rare terbium ion impurity in the volcanic ash that has never been found in comparable concentrations anywhere else on Earth. The navigators of the time reported that the glow was visible for up to 6 hours after application, roughly the duration of a crossing from Ifate to Tanna under favorable wind conditions. Modern materials, scientists have attempted to replicate the compound synthetically, but the specific crystalline structure created by the slow cooling of the volcanic deposit has proven difficult to reproduce in laboratory conditions.
Right. So we've got vanishing defense agreements and vanishing phosphorescent canoe paint. Themes of impermanence.
Terbium ion impurity. Of course there are. I'm now going to spend the rest of the day wondering what other rare earth-doped minerals are sitting under volcanoes we haven't studied.
That's the kind of thing that keeps you up at night, isn't it?
The geological lottery of useful impurities.
This has been My Weird Prompts, produced by Hilbert Flemingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review on your podcast platform. It helps other weird prompt enthusiasts find us. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. We'll be back next week with another prompt. Until then, keep your defense agreements current and your canoe paint phosphorescent.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.